97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the top NCAA men's Final Fours of all time. Our guest, Matt Andrews, who teaches sports history at UNC. So, Matt, as is often the case, we talk about lists when you and I get together.
Sure.
And every person has his own list.
Sports fans love lists.
Yep. Let me start by advocating that the most recent Final Four belongs on a list of the top Final Fours of all time. Would you concur with that?
I think if we're looking at pure athletic drama, absolutely. That Virginia game against Auburn on Saturday was spectacular. And they had a little bit of controversy, and controversy certainly helps. And then the game Monday night was absolutely fabulous. You just had a sense that Texas Tech was going to come back, and they did. For pure drama, yeah, I think it's absolutely going to be on a top 10 list.
So let's look at that Final Four again. Auburn had never made the Final Four.
Right.
Texas Tech had never made the Final Four.
Right.
Virginia had never won the championship. Virginia, talk about a story of redemption.
Absolutely.
The first one seed to lose to a 16 just last year.
Right.
And then to turn around and win the championship. To me, that should be high on any list. A one-point win against Auburn,
right.
An overtime win
right.
in the championship game against Texas Tech. Yeah. How does that not reach someone's top 10 list?
Yeah, I think that's right. We love drama in sports. We love the narrative of redemption in sports. And when I was looking at a lot of the picks at the beginning of the tournament, there were a lot of people who were picking Virginia. And part of me thought, well, you're just creating this narrative that you want to have happen. You know, after the shock of losing to UMBC, right, the first one to lose to a 16. And not just losing to a 16, they lost by, I think, 20 points in that game. And then here they were in game one of this tournament playing another 16 seed, and they were down 14 points at one time. I tuned in on the radio. And, you know, I was actually rooting for UMBC last year. I loved the idea of a 16 winning. This year, I just thought to myself, no, come on, those poor Virginia kids.
How could that happen?
We don't do that to them again. I don't have any particular affinity for UVA, but that just didn't seem fair. But so from, you know, really experiencing the worst loss in NCAA history and coming all the way back, I think it speaks to the fortitude of that coach and those players.
And you mentioned some controversy. There's always controversy.
True.
You know, Auburn's complaining about the foul call at the end, which, having been a sports official, I think was clearly a foul on the three-point shot.
I agree with you 100%. Definitely a foul.
And then the kid sinks ice in his veins, sinks the three free throws.
Yeah.
Again, for drama, that Final Four is hard to beat.
Yeah, and I think as far as controversy goes, I used to officiate basketball as well, and it didn't even occur to me that Jerome had double dribbled in the play leading you as well. I've been asking all of my friends who are big basketball heads, tell me the truth, did you know that was double dribble when it happened? And not a single person said yes. I stood up out of my chair and said that's double dribble, though it clearly was, if you look back at the play. But right, that foul, and I think getting lost, as you say, Charlie, in the controversy is Gay stepping up to the free throw line. And just you could just see it in his face. He was going to make all three, and he did exactly that.
And it's almost like him willing Virginia to him and some other players,
right.
But him specifically in that moment, willing Virginia to the win. Because it's like, we are completing this redemption story.
Yeah, and a lot of people were saying, oh, no, Virginia has already redeemed themselves because they made it to the Final Four, or they've already redeemed themselves because they made it to the final game. No, I think if they didn't win it, they would be remembered as the number one seed that lost to a 16 and then the number one seed who came so close but were ultimately losers. This is the cruelty of sports. If you don't win at all, we tend to peg people as losers. So I think for this narrative to have any justification, they had to win it, and they did exactly that. And that kid, boy, I mean, he hit the three just a couple seconds before. I actually have no doubt he was going to make that three had he not been fouled, even though it was a difficult shot. Then he makes those shots. I mean, that was a clutch performance.
And it's hard to imagine that that was Virginia's first championship ever. Ralph Sampson? And
exactly. Yeah,
players like that?
They had Ralph Sampson in the early 80s, who was supposed to be the greatest player of all time, the 7'4" guy. You know, they didn't even make it into the NCAA tournament his first year. I believe they won the NIT. They have such a storied tradition. I was surprised to hear that. Actually, I think I probably would have imagined that Virginia would have done this at some point. I was surprised in the final game when the announcer said only one other team from the state of Texas has ever won the NCAA tournament. And then, of course, I instantly thought, oh, this is Texas Western in 1966, which is, you know, maybe the most socially significant Final Four. Maybe we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, okay, so why is that socially significant?
Yeah, well, so the 1966 Texas Western team, they are a watershed in college sports. They started five black starters in that 1966 game that had never been done. In fact, Haskins, the coach, only played seven players in that game, all African-American. So this is important, but they're also playing against the University of Kentucky. And right or wrong, Adolph Rupp, the coach of Kentucky at this time, none of the SEC teams had black players at this time, but Adolph Rupp, because he was such a high-profile coach, was sort of seen as the coach who's most responsible for segregation in college basketball. And so when Texas Western beats an all-white Kentucky team, they've got a great player named Pat Riley, who obviously goes on to have a great pro coaching and GM career. It's sort of seen as the game that finally wakes people up to the fact that black players are every bit as good, if not better, than white players. And that if you want to win an NCAA championship, you have to consider.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the Final Four and the history of the Final Four with Matt Andrews, who teaches sports history at UNC. So Matt, let's look at some of the other Final Fours that have made someone else's list.
Okay.
All right. Duke is on three of the involved in three of the top 10 Final Fours, according to this list. Kansas is involved in three. UNC is involved in four.
Four. Okay.
All right. Of those four, UNC won two.
All right.
And they did so on miscues by the opponent.
That's right. Both in the New Orleans Superdome, if I'm thinking about this right. There's some sort of New Orleans voodoo that Dean Smith had going on. Yeah, I guess we're talking about 82, certainly. When I think of all-time great Final Fours, and part of it is what were the games that I was watching as a kid when I was most interested in college basketball? Boy, I think of that 82 Final Four, and particularly the championship game against Georgetown. If you think about retrospectively the talent that was on that floor, Michael Jordan, who hits the game-winning shot, James Worthy, Patrick Ewing as a freshman. I mean, Jordan and Ewing, two of the all-time great NBA players on the floor at the same time doing battle. He had two of the all-time great coaches, Dean Smith and John Thompson. They had coached together on the 1976 Olympic team. Everyone remembers the Jordan shot. I actually just showed the highlight in my race basketball in the American Dream course the other day when Fred Brown comes down and accidentally passes the ball with 5 seconds left to James Worthy, right, to seal the win.
It's not an errant pass.
No.
It's an inexplicable pass.
He, out of the corner of his eye, saw someone, thought it was his teammate, passed it to the wrong guy. James Worthy was, you've never seen a player more out of position when it comes to defense, but the ball came right to him. It was absolutely perfect for the Tar Heels.
And the other win on a miscue for the Heels on a miscue,
right,
was the timeout call.
Chris Webber, unbelievable. Chris Webber actually travels. I mean, he blatantly travels with about 15 seconds to go when he rebounds the missed free throw. And then, of course, yeah, it's in some ways, it's one of the most famous moments in Final Four history. There are different stories about whether or not Fisher, the coach of Michigan, had made it very clear that Michigan no longer had any more timeouts. I've looked at the replays when Chris Webber comes down. Give UNC credit. They boxed him in. They made him panic. There's someone on the Michigan bench yelling, call timeout, call timeout. Chris Webber calls timeout.
You can hear that on the video?
You can hear it and you can see it, actually. As he's coming down the court, you can see someone on the Michigan bench making the timeout motion. So I don't blame Chris Webber. You know, there were so many people, because of how controversial the Fab Five were, five freshmen, five sort of outlandish freshmen, the way they dressed, the way they acted. They were like five Muhammad Ali's in basketball
kind
uniform.
Kind of the Miami Hurricanes football team translated over to basketball.
That's exactly what they were, right? Yeah, I mean, Georgetown was sort of like that a few years before. UNLV was definitely like it, but Michigan took it to a whole new level with the baggy shorts and the black socks and the shaved heads. There were a lot of people rooting against Michigan, and I think they were very, very happy when Chris Webber made that mistake. I know Tar Heel fans were happy. I don't like to see any kid make a mistake like that and have to live with that kind of legacy.
Yeah, because even if there was a coach or someone yelling timeout, timeout, who's remembered for
right.
calling a timeout?
Yeah, and I actually think that Jeff Fisher, the coach of Michigan, made a mistake. I think in a big game like that, you always have a timeout in your pocket. You never know what's going to happen. These are young men, 18, 19. In this case, all the Fab Five guys were only 19 years old. The pressure can get to you. I don't remember the exact situation and the lead up as to why Fisher burned all his timeouts, but I'm sure he would have liked to have had one at the end of that game.
So let's talk about another Final Four, and that's the one when Butler made it all the way to the Final Four.
Right. Butler is a storied program, obviously, almost storied just for the fact that they play in the Butler Fieldhouse, which is one of the more legendary arenas. It's where the Indiana High School Basketball Championship used to happen, where Oscar Robertson for Crispus Attucks played and won the Indiana High School Championship. It's the arena that was made famous in the movie Hoosiers. And so Butler is sort of connected to this notion of old time nostalgic basketball. And then when Brad Stevens led them all the way, boy, they almost beat Duke in the final. I can't remember the name of the kid who almost hit a half court shot right at the buzzer, but that ball was almost in. That would have been, had that ball gone in, that's the number one moment in NCAA tournament history. But it's a game of inches, and he missed it.
So, according, again, to someone else's list,
yeah.
That's not the number one.
Okay.
The number one is NC State.
That's a perfectly fine
number one.
Yeah, I am too. If you remember that Final Four, and again, there was this string of remarkable championship games. 82 was UNC Georgetown. 83 is NC State over Houston, and then 84 with Ewing and Olajuwon, and then the 85 Georgetown-Villanova game. But that 83 game, I don't think anyone thought NC State had a chance. The final was the semifinal between Louisville and Houston. I mean, those were by far the two best teams. It was a dunk-a-thon. You know, Houston famously Phi Slamma Jamma. They had Clyde Drexler. They had Olajuwon. They had Winslow. They were just a remarkable team coached by Guy B. Lewis. You know, the only question, I think, going into the final was by how many points was NC State going to lose? This is Jim Valvano's legacy, you know, that and that speech that he gives at the ESPYs a couple of decades later. He very strategically slowed the game down. He started fouling Houston with about 7 minutes to go. Houston was up by about half dozen points. This is pre-shot clock, so the only way you're going to get the ball back, really, is the foul. Houston started missing free throws, and then we get that remarkable moment where Derek Wittenberg puts up the air ball and Lorenzo Charles dunks it in at the end. And the famous shot of Jim Valvano trying to hug someone. No one's hugging him, though.
Let's talk more about that particular game when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the NC2A Men's Final Four and what are some of the best games, the best matchups of all time. We're talking with Matt Andrews, who teaches sports history at UNC. So you mentioned the air ball, and that's an iconic piece of video
that
everybody knows. Olajuwon expects the ball to come off the backboard and turns to get the rebound, but it's short. how in the world does the NC State kid anticipate or know
right.
that it's going to be short?
Well, and I don't know what the answer is. I mean, and there's no reason to expect it's not going to hit the rim because Derek Wittenberg was on fire that entire tournament. You know, Derek Wittenberg and Sidney Lowe, two 6 foot, 6'1 guards at most, carried that team. Well, Thurl Bailey and Charles did well. But those guys, even without the 3-point shot, they were just magic from the outside. I remember thinking when Wittenberg takes that shot, and there was almost a steal when he grabs the ball and he shoots it from about 30 feet. I remember thinking at the time, that's going in. Of course, it wasn't anywhere close. And I guess Elijah Wan does get caught there. He's just caught watching the ball. He's not boxing out. Somehow he doesn't anticipate that it's going to be short. So I don't know what the answer is, but whatever Lorenzo Charles had for breakfast that morning, he was obviously. His head and his body were in the right place.
So that game is indicative of the underdog, number one,
yeah.
and the totally unexpected, not just the outcome, but the way the outcome came about. I think that's why it would be very high on the list for anybody.
I think that's right. It's a last second shot that wins it. Again, it has the drama. It's sort of the culmination of that entire miraculous run from NC State. You know, the famous phrase, survive and advance. And that is exactly what NC State did. They were barely won every single game. If memory serves, they were essentially in what today we would call the play-in game. And it took them 3 overtimes to beat Pepperdine in the first round to actually just continue this run. Every single game was high drama. You know, in some ways, I think you could argue that the game 2 years later, Villanova over Georgetown, just the amazing Georgetown team, Patrick Ewing, Michael Graham, Reggie Williams, and these other players, might even be considered more of an upset, but it lacked the high-intensity drama of a last-second shot.
And then you mentioned Valvano and his reaction.
And his reaction, which is absolutely
it's like
wonderful.
He couldn't even believe
that it had got in. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's one of the all-time great coaching performances, and it absolutely, you know, seals his legacy.
I do want to jump back to this year's Final Four.
Sure.
I listened to a lot of sports radio in the car. To a person, these prognosticators and commentators have been giddy almost with how great they thought that Final Four was.
Sure, and the Elite Eight was absolutely classic every single game. I think if you look at it as far as total points, differentiating winners from losers, it was the closest Elite Eight of all time. It was sort of a not particularly interesting tournament the first couple of rounds, and people were thinking, oh, you know, finally the magic is gone. But boy, that Elite Eight, that Final Four, that championship game, every game was close. So much drama. I could see why people were absolutely giddy about it. If I had a complaint about the I always have complaints about things. I am actually really tired of watching basketball games in football stadiums. There's something about the backdrop and the environment. The fans are so far away from it. I know the NCAA is talking about this, about maybe trying to get the Final Four back into basketball arenas, maybe even pro basketball arenas. But there's something about watching a basketball game. And I hear the students, the players say this, it's difficult to shoot in those arenas. I don't quite understand why the NCAA, in which people play in basketball arenas all year long, well, I know why they do it. They get 40,000 people.
Sure.
But it seems to me that TV is more important than actual ticket sales when it comes to college sports these days. I'd wish they'd put them in the more aesthetically pleasing basketball arenas.
I have friends and relatives who are big Hoos fans.
Okay.
You have to give it to them.
Oh, absolutely.
And what a turnaround from 1 year to the next.
Yeah. Being in the ACC, there's a lot of schadenfreude for the other ACC teams. You know, here on this campus, people rejoiced when Duke lost. And I know a lot of friends, they were rooting against UVA. No, I wasn't rooting against those kids. Yeah, no, I thought that was great.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Matt Andrews. Thanks also to engineer John Turner. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.